How you guys doing this morning?
Good. All right. Yeah, summer has kicked off officially. I don't see any clouds. It's been nice. It's been a good summer so far. So, good morning. Hello, people listening online. Like Johnny said, my name is John Lucas. I am the Student Ministries Associate Director, which is just too official of a name. I'm just the middle school pastor. This is a cool opportunity. It's cool and also kind of scary to wonder what they're doing upstairs in middle school while I'm down here. Just hope it's going well. Now, these interns are awesome. They're super cool, and I love the way that they're speaking into our middle school students this summer. But I'm excited to be down here this morning. I'm very excited to discuss what we have to discuss. We've been in this doctrine series over the last couple of weeks. If you missed out, we've covered some pretty big topics: the doctrine of the Trinity, our doctrine of the church, and last week, the doctrine of sin. Thank you, Matt, for taking on the doctrine that no one else signed up to cover. Very thankful for that one. But it was really good. I go back and listen to it. This week, we are talking about creation, or doctrine of creation. So why don't you guys open with me to Genesis 1:1, and we'll be hanging out there. You probably could have guessed that, but we'll be there all morning. So as you get there, I think that it is a perfect week to be talking about creation. I don't know if you guys have been reading articles or researching online and seeing the headlines that NASA just released the first photos from the James Webb Space Telescope. Have you guys seen these? Oh, let's put them on the board. These things are beautiful. They're so cool. This thing's amazing because it sees further out into the universe than any telescope before. It uses like this crazy infrared technology that gets way out there, and it travels somewhere around 1 million miles out into space, and it sends us back these wonderful images. Like, these are incredible. They're not some Photoshop artist stitching this all together. No, the infrared telescope is bringing back what's really out there, and it is just like jaw-dropping. I could stare at this forever. But what I found really cool this week in kind of studying for this talk is the description of the purpose for this telescope. Now, I'm going to read it, and you guys just got to imagine a Morgan Freeman silky voice talking over this description, okay? I am nowhere near that guy's voice. But here we go. The James Webb Telescope is the world's premier space science observatory. Webb will solve mysteries in our solar system, look back to distant worlds around other stars, and probe the mysterious structures and origins of our universe and our place in it. Right? Super cool. I love this prerogative there. And yes, I think these pictures are awesome. They're incredible. And yes, I've been listening to the Interstellar theme track music like all week, one of my favorite movies. Stars are cool, and I'm just a big old space nerd, so anything to do with space, I can get behind. But what catches my eye here about this telescope's purpose is that question, or the goal, to probe the mysterious structures and origins of our universe and our place in it. That question has some gravity, and I'm not meaning to use that as a pun. Like, that one, that question weighs heavy on us. What are our origins? What is our place here? This question has been asked from generation to generation, and to this day, it's still one of the vital questions that even drives NASA's space program. This question strikes a chord in us because the answer to this question, our origins say something about us. Where we come from matters. And the doctrine of creation, what we believe about that origin, answers these questions for us today. So today, we will learn about our origins, who made us and why that's important. And then we will talk about our purpose, our place amidst the stars. And then we'll end today by looking forward and asking, how do these truths affect my life today? So I'm very excited to share with you what our church holds true from the Bible about creation this morning. This is a pretty fun talk. But I know for many of you sitting out there today, this topic may already have you shifting around in your seat a little bit. The doctrine of creation tends to be a dividing point in a common area for debate amongst many outside and inside the church. At one point, I remember having that dreaded moment in my public science class where the teacher called on me and I had to give my explanation for where I believe creation came from. And I was just like, I don't know. And I gave a very churchy answer, and he proceeded to break it down and poke the holes in my belief. And you can believe me, I did not answer a single science question for the rest of my school career. No, I did not want to do that anymore. We could be all over the place on this. You may be looked at differently from peers at work, depending on what you say about this. People will attend church or leave church based on where they stand in this. Again, we're all in different areas. Some people have done their research. They're highly studied and just kind of jonesing for that deep philosophical conversation that goes on late into the night around the campfire. They've listened to the podcast. They've read the books. And maybe even some sketchy articles online from time to time. But they come at this question with their fists up, like ready to tackle it, ready to solve it. Others won't even touch this question with a 6-foot pole. They don't want to go anywhere near it. There's too much unknown, too many factors to consider, and frankly, it means hard questions and emotional strain, and you just don't want to go there right now. And that's probably where the majority of my life, I'd find myself, right? Wherever you find yourself on the subject this morning, these questions, they do weigh heavy on us. What are our origins, and what is our place here? But I believe we were made to care about this question. And I believe God cares even more so. Our doctrine as believers holds to the truth that what you believe informs the way that you live your life. That truth is no different from what we're discussing this morning. What you believe about your origins informs the way that you live out your life. And my hope is that by the end of this hour, you'll have a better grasp of the origins and who's responsible for it, that you were made intentionally with purpose, and that it matters today. It does matter. So let's dive in to what our doctrine of creation says. Are you guys ready to hear? Are you still following along? Okay, I haven't lost you yet. That's good. By the way, you can look at the little pamphlets around the church. They have our full doctrine statement there, and you can also look at any of our doctrine statements online under the Meet Us section on the website. So we're just going to divide this topic up into two sections this morning. So first one, here it is. We believe that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth and everything that exists out of nothing. God is at once transcendent from and intimately and intimately involved within and through what he has made. I practiced saying that one a few times this week. That was really good, right? And we get this doctrine from the first words of our Bibles. Genesis 1:1, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And I don't know how many times I've started a new Bible reading plan or opened up to this beginning of this book and read these words without recognizing the weight of these first words from God to Moses. In an article on his website, Paul Tripp says, "I'm persuaded that the first four words of the Bible are most important because they lay the foundation for everything else that the Bible is about." Now, have you guys ever sat in a movie theater and hung out for like 15 minutes and thought, "I still don't know what's going on in this movie"? Have you guys ever had that experience? Yeah, the Bible does not do that. It wastes no time. Genesis 1:1 shows that our origins begin with God, and that's what it's all about. It is God who created the heavens and the earth. Now, the original readers and listeners of this would have understood the heavens and the earth to be sky and land. Everything that they knew was attributed to God himself, God's work. So from the very first words of the Bible, we see, and God is saying, that he is our originator. He's who we come from. And if we keep reading, more is revealed to us about our origin. And now verse 2, these words are kind of eerie, okay? "Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." I'll let that sit for a minute. That's kind of a weird, creepy thought. Formless and empty. There was nothing. There's even silence in this room right now, right? You can translate this as the land was wild and waste. There was no order to be found. And the Hebrews had a great word for this, tohu vobohu. It means no worries, Just kidding. That's Hakuna Matata. I'm just checking if you're still following along with us. Tohu vubohu means out of nothing. Means out of nothing. Unordered or uninhabited. These words, they paint for the original readers a nothingness before God spoke the world into being. And guys, this is important to understand that our origin, it came from nothing, from this emptiness, that there was no substance present with God in eternity before the heavens and the earth, just God himself. We often use this imagery that God is this magnificent sculptor and creator and artist, and he's forming us out of clay into these beautiful pieces, right? But I think we need to take that a little further. We need to say that God also creates the clay and then sculpts us. God is eternal and an infinite being who always was, and with a breath, he created what we know. This is where we get our fancy theological word, ex nihilo, which literally means out of nothing. And ex nihilo teaches us so much. I can hang out here all morning, but I won't. I'm just going to say three huge things that this teaches us about our Creator. One, God isn't dependent upon anything else but his own power. He spoke and it was. There is no evil with him in the beginning. There is nothing with him besides God. Second thing, God is completely self-sufficient. There's a thought out there that God made us because he was lonely or something like that, or that he needed us for himself, but that's not true either. We have a triune God who is completely reliant upon himself. You guys, listen to the Trinity talk at the beginning of the series. God was okay with himself. He has the Son and the Spirit. He didn't need us. And third, God was not just a bystander in creating. He didn't just speak things into being and leave, but he was intentional and thoughtful when he formed the earth, the stars, and you and me, us, right? Again, I could spend all day here and talk about those points, but back to this point that God made everything out of nothing. And so what follows this unorderedness, this nothingness, is order. In each of the 6 days of creation in Genesis 1, God gives order to what we know. Verse 2, if you keep reading. Verse 2, light and darkness. Verse 3, evening and morning. Verse 9, the land and the sea. Then he starts filling that order up with stuff. Right, verse 16, the lights in the sky, the sun and moon. Verse 20, the creatures in the sea, the birds in the air. And finally, verse 26, the apex of his creation, man in his image, calling all that he has made very good. So from the first words of our Bible, we know about our originator, and we see how wonderful and how powerful he is. The 6 days of creation show us who God is, an intentional creator who is solely responsible for the creation of the universe. Now, with that being known, you guys can bring anything to God, and he's capable of helping you through it, right? And from here, after reading the six-day creation account, from here it's really easy to get swept up in a lot of the debates that we have about our origin of the earth. Okay, we could talk about young earth versus old earth, beliefs. Is it a 6,000-year-old earth, or do we side with carbon dating, which places the earth at millions of years old? From there, do we believe in the gap theory or age day theory or pictorial day theory? Guys, come talk to us if you want to learn more about any of that stuff. But I want to draw attention to the fact that our doctrine in the Bible does not go to those places, does not answer those questions. In studying for this message, I was reminded again and again of a truth that I think really helps us in approaching Genesis 1, specifically about our origin. In this book, How Not to Read the Bible, Dan Kimball repeats over and over again that the Bible was written for us, not to us. By the way, this is a great book to read. Thank you, Carly, for recommending this to me. It was really good. But write this down. This one's a great one. The Bible was written for us, not to us. And this is important because so often we approach creation, the creation account, with our own questions in our own time, usually for the purpose of interacting with science. So often we approach Genesis 1 with questions like, what's the age of the earth? Or what came first, the chicken or the egg? Or what happened to the dinosaurs? I'm sure you've caught yourself asking, why doesn't the Bible just make this stuff clear to me? Why isn't it just plainly written out? Wasn't that important, right? But Christian theology doesn't aim to tell us how the universe came into being. It tells us why God made it. So we need to change our way of thinking about this because science and theology take two different paths of thought. They're not enemies, right? They're just asking different questions. Science explanations takes the form, this event occurred because of. Theological explanations take the form, this occurred in order that, all right? So they're both asking mutually beneficial questions that benefit mankind and where we come from. So if we practice coming at creation story, knowing that the Bible was written for us and not to us, and knowing we should be asking why instead of how, we arrive at our purpose today, to praise God because he alone is worthy of that praise and willing to share in his creation with us. So let's think about it. Let's put this to practice. Genesis 1 was exactly what he wanted the people of Israel to know about himself and about themselves. If we believe that these words were written to them for us, we'd see things like the fact that Israel, upon hearing these words for the first time, were just released from captivity that lasted hundreds of years. Some speculate like 400 years in captivity under the Egyptians, right? And this culture, the Egyptians, they worshiped, they had a polytheistic view of life. They worshiped many, many gods. And they had a different creation story. And they didn't know who they were supposed to, they did know, like they're supposed to please all the gods by doing these various acts. They had a god of the sun and the moon and the god of chaos and disorder, each one having to be kept pleased. And what God is doing when he finally gets them out into the desert, through the first words of the Bible, he's retelling truth in a way that they could understand. And the people in the desert, the people of the Bible wouldn't be asking questions we have today. But God told them what they needed to know then and all that we need to know today. He told them the story about where they had come from and what their true creator said about them, right? God is responsible for our origin. That's what he was telling them. It's all because of God. So this brings us to our second section of our doctrine statement. It says, how are you guys doing, by the way? Doing pretty good? Following so far? Okay, good. This is a lot of info. You guys are doing really good. Section 2, it says, everything that God created, he declared very good. We get that from verse 31. We believe that God made human beings male and female in his image and likeness and entrusted them to serve as stewards of all creation. The image of God given to us is the ground for the inherent dignity and worth of all people everywhere. Those are, Dick, we can chew on that for a long time too. So section 1 told us that our origins, they start with God. Section 2 is where we start to understand our place amidst the stars. The what is our place here answer to the question from NASA. And these I love this because these statements of our doctrine, they directly attack some of the lies that we often believe about our purpose here, our place here. One of them being that my worth is dependent solely upon what I do and who the world says I am. Now, I don't know how many of you need to hear this today, but for me, there are many moments in my life where I found my worth in what the world values. How good I am at my job, the things I possess. Do I have that car yet? Do I have the right house? I can't even afford a house now. How capable I am at my job, right? My students know this, but there was a time in my life where, believe it or not, I did not always want to be a youth pastor. I was not saying that in preschool, like, I want to grow up to be a youth pastor. No, I went to a school for gifted young children. It was not for X-Men. It was a school for students who wanted to pursue a trade. So I went to a trade school, and I loved and was enamored with photography and video. So I spent 2 years in high school studying video and photography. I produced morning shows for our school. I submitted PSAs, public service announcements, that aired on live television. They're usually about like not smoking. It was bad. So it was really cool. And I created an identity and worth around what I did. I built a resume, and I got a job right out of high school at a TV station in California. And I was thinking at this time, like, man, look at me. I'm doing pretty good. I'm fresh out of high school with a job. I got some natural talent. I'm about to be completely self-sufficient at the age of 18. Isn't that the goal? No. But I was swiftly knocked off my high horse, thankfully, by the realities of life and my really bad decision-making skills. I made a bunch of silly mistakes on the job, but most embarrassingly, I wrecked one of our cameras with a $20,000 lens on it. And I remember being terrified to go back to the station and talk to my news director, and he sat me down in the room and said, John, you're great, but you're kind of a liability that we don't want to pay for anymore. So they let me go that day. It was harsh, right? And as you can imagine, I'd been building up the self-worth around what I did for years, and it plummeted. This whole season of life was a downer. I moved back home. I broke up with a girlfriend at the time. I moved back in with my parents, and I couldn't land another job. But here's what's important about this story, okay? My view of myself during this time was based around what the world valued, and I valued the wrong thing. And it was based around what the wrong person said about me, that I was a liability and that I was not good enough. I felt like a failure based on what the world said was valuable, and I was listening to the wrong things. But guys, God created me with worth. It says so in the very first chapter and then throughout the rest of the book. Genesis 1:26 said, "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image after our likeness.'" Verse 31, it says, "God saw all that he had made, and it was very good." And then I just got to use this one. Psalms 139, 13 through 14 says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." From the beginning, we were made with value. I know many of you may have been in that season in life. Maybe you're there now, and you need to be reminded of your worth. You need to be reminded that your value isn't dependent on what you do or how much you make, the friends you have, or what someone says about you. It's dependent upon God, on who God says you are. Only the voice that matters is the Creator's voice. Okay? Another lie we often believe about our place is that we shine brightest by ourselves. You may often hear sayings today like, "You be you," or "You be your best self," which has the message often behind it that you are capable of overcoming everything by yourself. We live in a self-sufficient, superhero-chasing society that screams the message, "You are capable of overcoming anything by yourself, your own strength." And yes, there is some good to that message, but we often take it too far and think individualism is the goal. That's what we're striving towards, is being completely self-reliant, right? But guys, if God says that we are made in his image, then we are made to be in community, just as God the Father lives in community with the Son and the Spirit. I love this quote from Paul Tripp again. He says, "When you look at the doctrine of creation, in the first three chapters of Genesis, you'll find that Adam and Eve lived in constant community with both God and each other." This is huge. Self-sufficiency never existed, even in a perfect world. I had a really fun weekend. Did any of you guys go to the Gig Harbor Art Festival yesterday? Raise your hands. Did any of you guys do that? That thing was awesome, right? It was super cool. They kind of just take over all of downtown Gig Harbor. There's like chalk art going on everywhere. My wife and I, we had to start from a couple blocks up because there was no parking, but it was kind of good because we walked in and you start seeing chalk on the ground, these little individual squares for artists to just mess up and create art. It was wonderful, right? But as you get closer and closer, you start seeing more and more art, and all this stuff was wonderful. We got some seriously talented people in the harbor, by the way. What are you guys drinking around here? This is amazing. But my favorite piece of art was actually just this gigantic sea turtle. You have it up there on the screen. I love it. On its back were different spaces on the shell for multiple people to draw in. And you could tell, like, multiple people had worked on this thing because it was huge. It was so big. And it kind of stood out to me as something beautiful among the other pieces of art. They're all beautiful, but this one stood out to me. It was an image of how beautiful something can be when worked on together. And yes, it was probably harder to do this one and pull together. Like, you can imagine the kids arguing which chalk space to take over, or who did the turtle head first, or whatever, right? It was probably harder to get together, but the end result was beautiful, and it paid off. It was like the biggest one there, right? God's plan for us involves being shoulder to shoulder with others. God created Adam with a partner to work in the garden. For some of us today, maybe this is hard. You may be thinking of the people that have said something to hurt you. Maybe you're thinking of the mistakes you've made that you now have to own up to. You may be thinking of what you have to let go of in order to have true community. You may be thinking it's just easier to figure things out and do everything myself. I know I say that a lot in youth ministry. It's just easier to do things myself. But we were never meant to be alone. God created you in his image, and we are to live relationally. Our place amidst the stars is with God and one another. Okay, so I'll share with you one last lie, okay? And it's the lie that some of us buy into, especially the last couple years. It's the lie that there is no hope for creation, so why try to save it? Our place amidst the stars, sometimes it's burning down. If you've turned on the news in the last 3 years, how could you not think that? We faced a paralyzing pandemic that did a really good job, by the way, of isolating us and dividing us and separating. We are a nation that is very politically divided. How can that ever be reconciled? And we live in a war-torn world still, causing thousands right now to flee in search of safety. It's really easy to believe this lie that we're headed towards a trajectory with no hope, that we're not capable of being saved. And John, this image of creation, it's really nice, but I don't think that we're ever going to get back to it. And yeah, it can kind of feel that way sometimes, right? Genesis 3 talks about how sin and how it's done a really good job of splitting us apart from each other and God. Guys, listen again to last week's message on sin. Sin is a liar and wants you to think that there is no hope. It wants to take away the glory from God himself as our Savior. And it wants us to live that individualistic life. But church, we do have hope, and we are still called to be stewards of this earth. And it's all because of what Jesus did on the cross. And if you believe that Jesus died on the cross and rose again, restoration will be restored someday. Revelation 21:1 says, "Then I saw a new heaven and new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away." Guys, heaven and earth made new is literally one of the final images we get in our Bibles. And it's all possible because of what Christ did on the cross. Jesus' resurrection is the hope of all creation. This promise of a new heavens and earth should not leave us hopeless, but should push us towards actually living a holy life, because there's still work to be done today. We should treat creation now as it will be in the new heavens and earth. We have an originator that deeply loves us, and we still have a place here. And I hope that resonates with you guys today. I hope you guys are encouraged by that there is still hope, that you are created by a God who loves you deeply and has created you and says you're beautiful and you were created very good. So at this time, I want to invite the band back to the stage. And as we kind of wrap up, know that we'll be a deacon and myself in the corners, and we can pray for you. And we're about to do communion, but I want to leave you kind of with this cool vision of what, or this cool choice we have to make today. Guys, we have a daily decision now to live out this calling as images of God. I do have a favorite book. One of my favorite books in the Bible is actually Jonah. It has ton of lessons to learn from and things to pull from that affect us. And most notably today, I think that the book of Jonah has a lot to say about this choice to participate in God's creation. This is from Millard Erickson's book on theology, and he gives a good synopsis of the whole book. In the book of Jonah, everyone and everything, except Jonah, obeys God's will and plan. There's the storm, the dice, the sailors, the great fish, the Ninevites, the east wind, the gourd, and the worm. Each part of creation is capable of fulfilling God's purpose for it, but each obeys in a different way. The inanimate creation does so mechanically, obeying natural laws which govern the physical world. The animate creation does so instinctively, responding to impulses within. Man alone, I love this, man alone is capable of obeying God consciously and willingly, and thus glorifies God most fully. Man alone is capable of obeying God consciously and thus glorifies God most fully. Guys, you are capable. God has done everything to allow you to live out the calling he has given you, to glorify him for all eternity. He has made it possible to live out this purpose of praise through what Jesus did on the cross. And we remember this weekly by taking communion. Will you guys take it with me? Will you guys stand as we take communion? First Corinthians 11, 23 through 26 says, "For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.'" Take the bread. In the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is a new covenant, my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance as me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." Just take the cup. Lord, we thank you this morning. We praise you this morning that you are just a wonderful creator. You created us, all that we know, and you called it good. Lord, challenge us this week as we look at our own lives. We look at ourselves and we try to find worth, but Lord, may we listen to your words, what you say about us from the beginning, that we are valued, that we are made in your image, and that we are still here with a purpose. Lord, we thank you for how you love us. Pray that we have a great week going forward, dwelling on this. In your name, everybody said,